Welcome to the Game Award, the best podcast for pro white gamers, their families, and nobody else. Joined here with Bobby, Rollo, and very special guest, the absolutely wonderful and very, very handsome Gordon Call. Gordon?
Hey there, Ruckus. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on your show.
All right. Well, Gordon, you're here. We have to ask some questions. First off, do you lift?
Yes.
All right. And tell me, how many of those Culver's waitresses and big titty goth farm girls are chasing you now?
Well, none.
Now, see, that's not true at all. I know Gordon's being humble here, but the fact is he's got all of them chasing him. He's got a virtual harem of girls trying to be his chief concubine, and he doesn't even need a marble bathtub to make it happen.
that is true. Ooh. That is true.
All right, Gordon, what kind of games do you like to play just in general?
Well, to be honest, man, I don't really play video games much at all anymore. It's nothing against them per se. It's just I haven't had as much time as I used to. Before, though, I always played like RPGs and real-time strategy stuff like StarCraft.
StarCraft. I hear that's a good game.
I enjoy it from time to time. Mm.
Now, I haven't played it, but I am familiar with the term Zerg Rush.
Yeah. I mean,
that's what you do when you're based.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But yeah, I think if we just want to get into it.
Oh, yeah.
Because StarCraft came out in 1998. And it was, you know, it's made by Blizzard, and they made Warcraft.
Brood War was 98. I believe StarCraft was 97.
I'm looking at it here, and it says 1998. And then Brood War was released.
That we nailed down the right number.
Yeah, it's very important.
Yes, it's very important, yes.
To be fair, if we didn't get the exact right number, like, let's be real here. The audience of the Gamer Word is probably one of the more autistic audiences in the Americana universe. And if we didn't get the year exactly right, there would be a very long comment about it. Listen, I'm not saying that as an insult. Yeah. Like, we know it to be true. Like, come on. Guys that want to listen to 3 hours of, like, Dark Souls content.
Like, hey, we barely even touched on that. There'll be more to come in the future.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, so
it came out coming in nicely with your first appearance here, Gordon. Hey,
I'm the one who plays StarCraft. I am definitely autistic. StarCraft came out in the late 90s. That'll cover all of our bases.
March 31st, 1998, according to the Wikipedia.
I was trying to get past the exact date.
And Brood War was also 98. So that's
the same year. Yeah, and then it was a sequel to Warcraft, of course, like hence the name. I think they did Warcraft 2, and then they did StarCraft, I think. Which I didn't play much Warcraft 2, actually. I played a lot of Warcraft 3, but
Warcraft 1 and 2. Play anything.
Yeah. I didn't have 1 or 2. A buddy of mine, because I was pretty young when these were out, and a buddy of mine had 2, and I played it at his house, and it was a good time, I remember. But it was, from what I understand, it was pretty revolutionary for the time. Like, it introduced a lot of concepts and standardized a lot of things about RTSs that hadn't really been before, because, you know, it was like they'd kind of done Warcraft and they had things like Command and Conquer, but I don't know how many other RTSs there were at the time. Maybe one of you guys knows a little bit more on that, but I mean, like, you know, like Ruckus, you mentioned the term Zerg Rush, right? Because there's the three factions. There's the Terrans, which are like humans, the Protoss, which are like the super advanced, like pseudo mystical aliens, and then the Zerg, which are the evil, like, horde of bugs, right? And they kind of, because it has those three factions, they have those three factions, and they're each balanced, right? So like the Protoss are like elites, right? Like, all of their units are more expensive, but they're also like pound for pound better. Like, the default Protoss warrior unit is stronger. The Terran warrior unit is not as strong, but it has a ranged attack. And then the Zerg warrior unit is weaker, but it is fast, and you make two for the price of one. Right. So that's kind of, that kind of tells you how these guys are balanced.
And isn't it only like 50?
Well, I think
you have 200 supply.
Well, I think he's talking about the cost.
I'm pretty sure that the cost of the Zergling specifically.
I believe Zerglings and Marines both cost 50 minerals, but you get two Zerglings for 50. And then the Zealot, the Protoss one, costs like 100, if I remember correctly. Mm. But it's just, but that's so, like the general.
Yeah, with Zerg,
that's
if the, you micro it, you know, you can survive.
Yeah, but that's like the general way it's balanced. Like that kind of tells people, I think, maybe how to like, because it carries over into like how these races like function and their lore and everything. Like the Protoss are very focused on, like, basically the Protoss are elves, right? The humans are humans, and the Zerg are like orcs. Like, you know, if you wanted to like compare it to like Warcraft.
You're comparing my favorite race to my least favorite race.
Well, I mean, if the shoe fits on the weird insect feet. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and the game came out, and I remember because I was fairly young when this came out, and I played it at my cousin's house, and I was immediately hooked on it. I don't know what it was about it that got me so much. I think the big thing was because this was released back in the day, and if you got like the War Chest, which had like this and the expansion, it had the big manual that was like I think it was like 80 or 100 pages, and like it wasn't just like, you know, put game in computer, hit install or whatever. It had like, it was basically like a short novella, right? Like each there was like a complete history of each faction. They had all kinds of like pictures in there. I still remember being like little young chubby Gordon, like, you know, with my chubby child's hands paging through this thing. And it was so different than any other like game that I'd ever encountered before. And that was kind of the standard for Blizzard, at least back in the day. Cause like Diablo also did that. I assume Warcraft did. Like I said, I owned Warcraft 3. And I think they still did that in Warcraft 3. And it kind of just, it was because, you know, this is at the time that Blizzard was like, I mean, he was like one of the best developers around that I can think of. I mean, it kind of like had the same status as like Rockstar Games, right? Like anything they produced was gold.
Mm-hmm. And was this still Blizzard North when they created the first StarCraft?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think it was just, I think it's just Blizzard Entertainment, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
Let me see.
But I'm not sure when it became Blizzard here. North.
I'm looking here. It looks like the mid to late 90s was actually just the big time for RTSs, because the only ones I really played were like Black and White 2 and Dungeon Keeper, which came out between.
I love Dungeon Keeper. Dungeon Keeper.
Right, 2.
But the other RTS you were thinking of, Gordon, was Age of Empires.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Whoa, 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 whoa. Yeah, I remember Age of Empires.
Age of Empires, Age of Mythology. I played a lot of that one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it primed me for StarCraft, like, online. So that's where me and Gordon share big, big differences. He likes a nice story. He likes to be tucked in. And I like to, but now they've kind of changed the algorithm a little. Like, this is just zooming forward all the way to StarCraft 2 with all the expansions. Now you can't really do like BM, bad manners, you know, in the text chat anymore. They kind of frown upon that. And the algorithm is there to get you, you know.
Really? Because whenever I log in, like the few times I'm able to, like, you know, get a game in or whatever, I see some pretty spicy things being said in general chat in StarCraft 2.
Yes, the general chat is like that. But I'm talking about like in a match with somebody.
Yeah, like you can't like call somebody a faggot or whatever anymore.
Yeah, they're like GG no re, and you're like, you know, kill yourself, you fucking fanook. And they're like, nah, you can't say that. What are you doing? You're doing BM.
Yeah, things have definitely changed a lot in terms of the game. I mean, Bobby said, I'm really more of a lore fag on this thing. But like, the thing that always struck me about StarCraft 1 is that I can't think of another game where the heroes are basically like working class, like, you know, like rednecks or like hillbillies or whatever, like, you know, whatever, like, you know, those are all like pejoratives, I suppose, but they're very clearly based off of like people from Appalachia or the American South or, you know, parts of the Midwest, which might have been what kind of spoke to me so much. Well, because they all, like, you know, everybody has like that slight like country twang to their voice. I mean, you know, the in StarCraft yes, 1, sir. the main
human in the group, rear with the gear.
Yeah, the main human group is the Terran Confederacy. Yeah,
good to go.
You know, yeah.
We'll just keep going with this.
Yeah, but that's it's you know, and it was interesting. Yeah. Well, it was interesting too because the Confederacy, they didn't do like evil empire or whatever. The Confederacy is kind of just like a not very well administered state. Like it's kind of corrupt. It has like and part of it is right, because StarCraft 1, it had 10 missions for each race and they didn't have a ton of story. You know what I mean? Like a lot of it was like really broad strokes, like you were supposed to like replaying it, I realized that a lot of things that I had remembered were stuff I just kind of like thought was happening, like in my own mind, right?
But well, the story is just a framework to hang a video game
on. Yeah, yeah.
Where like now it almost seems like the reverse happens. Like they wanted to make a game, and then they just added a little bit of backstory to what was happening to give the game more depth. So it doesn't feel like you're just clicking around. You feel like you get a little bit of investment in what's happened.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why people talk about like, I know there are people that complain because, you know, I mean, I guess for people who spoilers for this, what, like 20 something year old game.
Oh God, I'm covering my ears.
Yeah. You know, cause like the main plot of the first game, like very roughly is, you know, there's a rebellion inside of the Terran Confederacy, ironic. Right. And that's you play as, the commander and you have like hero units, like guys like this guy named James Rayner, who is like he was the marshal of this planet that was overrun by the Zerg, which gets destroyed by the Protoss. So you can kind of see there's this three.
And he has a unibrow.
Yeah, he has like a unibrow. And I don't know if he was supposed to, or if that was just like the bad like image quality of that era. Like maybe he was just supposed to have like a very like,
that's what I think of.
Yeah. No, I always thought
he
that too.
Like he has he has an unfortunate hairline and a unibrow.
He looks like a skinhead
away from Jim Rayner.
He looked like a skinhead with a unibrow, 100%. It was really funny. But Rayner is the marshal of Marsara, which is this planet that's being invaded by the Zerg. You play as like the local magistrate, right? Which is just, you are like the omnipotent like eye in the sky, just like in any other RTS. And, you know, you're trying to fight off these Zerg, you're failing, the Confederacy isn't helping you, and then the Protoss show up and they like nuke the planet, like they glass it. And because you've been betrayed by the Confederacy, you choose to side with the Sons of Korhal, which is a terrorist group that is trying to overthrow the Confederacy. And, you know, like that's the plot of the Terran campaign. Eventually, you know, James Rayner meets Sarah Kerrigan, who is a ghost, which is like a psionic. They're like psychic assassins who works for the Sons of Korhal. She is betrayed and left to the Zerg to die, which then leads into the Zerg campaign, where she is actually like turned into like a half human, half Zerg monster. And, you know, you play through that one, which is just, honestly, it's been a long time. I don't actually remember the plot of the Zerg campaign. I always play, but the Terrans were my favorite race, so I always played them all the time. Bobby, do you remember
StarCraft 2 now, right?
I'm talking about one still. Do you
He's
remember
talking about the- one. He's talking about vanilla.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
even Brood War. Do you vanilla, remember?
Not even Brood War. No, I actually didn't really. No, I didn't really play it.
The plot of vanilla was kind of. War. Honestly, that's fair because like the plot of vanilla wasn't really all that important anyway. Like you know, Kerrigan basically like takes over the Zerg.
I remember very little of vanilla. I remember a lot of Brood War, and I played a lot of vanilla.
Brood War definitely is where the game like hit its stride, right? Because like you know you play as Brood
War feels like. It feels like it has a story that is more involved because the cutscenes even have like stuff happening. Like let's rewind to just the cutscene of the first StarCraft. I remember watching that and having no idea what was happening versus the opening cutscene in Brood War, where it's very clear what's happening.
It was very well done, just by adding a little cinematic.
And the first cinematic for the Protoss. It's the fall of Phoenix, but I was so unclear as to what actually happened. I was like, did Phoenix die? I'm not sure. You know,
they were almost like silent movies because they didn't have very much dialogue or anything.
I don't remember much dialogue at all. Like even in the closing Protoss cutscene where they killed the Overmind.
I don't think there was any dialogue in the Protoss.
I don't either.
They had a little bit in the Terran ones, and yeah, it made it difficult to tell. But I mean, you know, like I said, I was very young when
were
I played.
Were there? Was there dialogue in the Terran one?
I don't know in the first game. No, in the first. Yeah, remember
that's
the first
what I'm talking
game,
about.
In the first game, when on one of the Terran missions, there's these two like you know guys in like an army jeep driving down the road, and they go, "Look out, Sarge!" And one of them hits something.
I love you, Sarge. Yeah, that one.
But they get out, and it's like. That's a Zergling, Lester. That's a smaller type of Zerg.
Yeah, I remember that one.
So, like, they had some stuff like that, but and obviously,
I don't think the Zerg of the Protoss.
Yeah, they didn't have the Zerg of the Protoss talk, which is, I mean, with Zerg, like, makes sense, obviously, but the Protoss, like, were telepathic or whatever. But yeah, Brood War definitely is where the game like really picks up having like a plot. I don't know. I mean, because it was released in the same year, so they had to have been working on them, simultaneously? I mean, there's no way there was that little turnaround time. Like they couldn't have started on it after one was released if it was released in the same year. Even back then, it would have taken way longer to make a video game. But Brood War definitely has, like, much more of a plot. You know, when you're playing the Terrans, Earth, like in like the United Earth government invades the region of space you're in and like tries to overthrow, like basically they knock over the newly formed Terran Dominion that was started by the Sons of Korhal after they won their like little rebellion. The Protoss lose Ire, their homeworld, to the Zerg, and there's a bunch of stuff with like the Dark Templar who are like, you know, a very 90s like sort of edgy. Yeah, they're very like edgy, sort of like darker, edgier faction.
The Dark Templar are like far and wide the coolest of everything.
They are
all of StarCraft. Like if they you were take my favorite each individual thing, they are the coolest. They're cooler than every Ultralisk or Goliath or pick whatever. Don't you dare defend the Goliath.
The Goliath is cool. I like the Goliath actually.
It's not cooler than the Dark Templar.
Well, no, but it is cool. Yeah,
there's only one terrible unit. It's the Scout. Everything else has
the Scout
its
was
own
really not
charm.
Good. I also didn't like the Scourges. Was that what they were called?
Scourges.
The Scourges, the ones that go. Yeah! The Zerg suicide bombers. Well, not the well. There's two Zerg suicide bombers. There's the infested Terrans, and then the ones
not Banelings.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the Banelings were in two. And the plot of Brood War, right? Like the United Earth Directorate invades, they start like fucking everything up. Kerrigan like comes back, like the now like Zerg queen, and she basically manipulates everybody into throwing in with her to drive out the United Earth Dominion. And once they do that, the United Earth Directorate, and once they do that, she betrays everybody all at once, kills a bunch of people. She kills the Protoss hero Phoenix. She betrays Raynor.
And And Duke. She kills Duke and Phoenix at the same time. Those are by far the two coolest characters.
Duke was a very cool. Like, he would, like, you know, it was like, you fringe world yokels are all alike. Don't know where your loyalties lie. He was a great villain. Yeah, like,
I'm back now, yeah.
No, they had.
Dude, he wasn't even a villain though.
He was
almost like an anti-hero. He was just kind of like an old curmudgeon.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could call him an antagonist.
He was antagonistic, but only for like certain perspectives. Because in the end, he was ultimately a good guy, because he was opposed to the Sons of Coral.
Yeah.
And they were the actual villains.
No, I mean, well, yeah, that's kind of the thing, right? Because in the first game, you're playing as the Sons of Coral, and it's kind of pitched to you as, I mean, the Sons of Coral have a legitimate grievance because the planet Coral tried to secede from the Confederacy, again, ironic, and in response, they were nuked. Like, the whole planet, like, it used to be like a garden world, and they got nuked so hard that it became like an irradiated desert planet. And Arcturus Menx, the leader, is the, you know, he was like the son of a prominent family there. And a lot of this gets explained in like tie-in novels, which are not terribly good. I confess I got them and read them, but they were not really worth it. But, you know, and so they have like legitimate grievances, right? And they seem reasonable at first, but then, like, you know, they kind of do the whole bit where the deeper you get in with them, the more that James Rayner and you, the non-speaking magistrate character, kind of like, we kind of thought these guys were like, you know, Mabased freedom fighters, but they're like luring Zerg to destroy whole planets out of like petty revenge and stuff.
Can we talk about how much of a hippie liberal douche Manx looks like? Like, whenever there's a parody of like some boomer liberal hippie, that's exactly what Manx looks like.
Well, Manx. Honestly, I spell so Arcturus M-E-N-G-S-K. It's Arcturus Menx. And I actually think that was intentional, because if you look at him in the first game, he's got like, he's almost got like a man bun. Actually, he does have a man bun.
I think it was intentional.
Cause he's supposed to be like a Che Guevara, right? Like,
he's supposed to look non-threatening, and he's supposed to be the freedom fighter.
Yeah. And in the second game, he kind of has like a more clean cut look, right? And he's dressed in a very like fascist sort of like aesthetic. But in the first game, yeah, like he looks like a boomer that smoked too much weed at a Grateful Dead concert.
Yeah, I agree. He's
shit. And he has that very like refined sort of deep South accent. You know what I mean? It's like he's like a very like charming individual. So like, they did a lot of, he was a good villain. I thought they did a decent job with his characterization. And then of course there's like,
can you do an impersonation?
I will try. Let me see. It's like I will rule this sector or see it burnt to ashes around me. You know, like he sounds like what you would imagine, like a guy from the deep south. Like he sounds like what you would imagine like Huey Long to sound like or something. You know what I mean? Like a very like,
I'm looking at pictures of the character, and he looks like you got that voice correct. So
yeah. Well, it's just, and he was a very good villain. And so that was how Brood War ended, was with Kerrigan betraying everybody. Like, basically, she'd gotten all of them to put their armies to take the brunt of the assault from the United Earth Directorate. And then she destroyed them. And then, you know, while all the rest of them were trying to recover, she messed them up too. And then the game ends with her declaring herself Queen Bitch of the Universe. And then... And then for what was it like, because that was in 98, and then StarCraft 2 didn't get released until 2011, I believe. 2007. Or no, it was announced in 2007, and then it was released in 2010.
Yeah.
And by that time, I didn't care.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was stoked for
cared.
It. As soon as, yeah, trust me.
Is Sarah Kerrigan the original Monster Girl?
Yeah. So that is one thing, like Sarah Kerrigan, 100%. Mm-hmm. Like, I was actually talking about this with Rusty, who's been on Ascending the Spectrum before, and he mentioned having played this game, and he said he would definitely have done her back in his more degenerate days. And yeah, it's very, they went whole hog on the like very like overly sexualized like character design. And it only got worse in
two. As Blizzard did back in the day.
Yeah. You know? And it only got worse in two. Cause like in one, she was at least like fully clothed. And then like two,
well, you becomes, also, like, and you also couldn't see really what she looked like. You just saw her like Tokyo Hotel hair and her lazy eye.
Well, they did have
look at what she actually looked like.
They did have more of her image, like on the cover art of the game and stuff. Like you could kind of see what they were going for, but yeah. And then there's at the end of the game when she like declares herself Queen Bitch of the Universe, there is like the final shot of her standing in her like weird bone blade wings spread out or whatever. Mm-hmm. So you can see vaguely what she looked like in the game, but all of the cutscenes were really terrible quality in Brood War. And I mean, they were good for the time, don't get me wrong, but like if you go and watch them now, like they're not terribly great. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so StarCraft II came out like, you know, 10, 12 years later. And the game, they did it one of their first sins. So the original StarCraft had 10 missions for each race. And then Brood War also had 10 missions for each race, right? So there were, you know, 20 missions total, give or take, on the same disc. Well, you know, 10 on one disc, 10 on the other. StarCraft II, they did the episodic release thing. So they released Wings of Liberty, which was the Terran campaign, which, to be fair, I believe had like 20 or 30, it had 29 missions.
That's the one about the fat guy that plays Call of Duty, right?
No, this is not Wings of Redemption. This is Wings of Liberty.
You stole the words. I was thinking that too. I was like, that's too easy.
And you know, I believe each other, because they did Wings of Liberty, which was the Terran campaign, Heart of the Swarm, which was the Zerg one, and Legacy of the Void, which is the Protoss one. And I think they each had close to the same number of missions. So they, but I mean, you know, the thing you'll notice, right, is Wings of Liberty has 29 missions, so it's one less than the total number of missions you had in StarCraft 30. 1. Yeah, and you can only do 26 of those missions in a single playthrough, because there were some that were branching choices. So now, like the game is still like, it's still very good quality. Like, I mean, it has its problems, but Wings of Liberty is probably the best of the StarCraft 2 campaigns. It feels the most like the first StarCraft games. And in that you are playing as James Rayner, who has been on the run from Arcturus Mengsk, kind of, you know, he is now doing to Mengsk what Mengsk did to the Dominion. He's running Rayner's Raiders. They're sort of a freedom fighter. You know, they're called terrorists by the regime. They have stolen a very fancy starship that they use as their base. You know, like I believe the best quote of it is the one they have in the StarCraft wiki. It's about time we kick this revolution into overdrive. That kind of tells you like the way that this like whole campaign goes, right? And I mean, I guess we don't have to like tell the whole story of how the games are. I suppose I'm probably going a little too in depth in that. But the thing
What can you really comment on? All you do is you click some people around. Maybe you want to use some hotkeys instead, and then you click on another part. That's the whole game. I think the more interesting aspect is everything but that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and two has. Yeah. Two was basically the same game as one. They did do, there were a lot of quality of life improvements. Like and I think a lot of this was due to technical limitations. In the first game, you could only select 12 units at a time, whereas in two, you can select as many units as you want. In the first game, you had a supply limit of 100, where like, you know, larger units like tanks or something might take like 6 supply, and a regular unit like a Marine takes 1. And then in StarCraft II, they upped that cap to 200. So you could have far larger armies.
Supply depots required.
Yeah, you could have far larger armies.
Not enough
men. More overlords.
You could select as many units as you wanted. And I know that there were. Yes. And I know there were people that complained about that and said that it like ruined.
You must. They said that it like additional pylons.
They said it was a takeaway. I'm trying my best, audience, to tell
you. Don't have enough supply depots. Okay, that if you had more supply depots, you could get your point out.
I'm working hard against the tide of autism here, audience. Like it's you have no idea. I'm a man trying to swim desperately to freedom off of like a prison island. But the prison island is
additional
autism.
Supply depots required.
Yeah. Now, but like
Gordon,
I said,
have a snorkel now.
Thank you. But there were some like, well, don't you, Rolo. That's rude. But there was like, there was some technical limitations. Right?
And I know earned it.
At the time when StarCraft II was released, there were people that complained that being able to select more than 12 units detracted from the strategic element. Which is probably true because
it makes Zerg Rush less efficient.
Wouldn't it make it more efficient to be able to select more than 12 units?
No. I'm saying it's less efficient when you can only do 12.
Oh, yeah.
It would be more efficient if you do more. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because like you basically, in one, you effectively were moving squads of men individually, whereas in two, it basically always boils down to like a big blob of all of your units, which
well,
I can definitely.
You can split up your units into different hotkeys and
you
then
can
attack, you know, from and which is what you should do. You know, I played like online a lot and I remember this game being like chess for a higher class of human, you know, where it's not like you hit a stopwatch on a table and then spend 20 minutes deciding where to move. It's like, nah, you got to do it as quickly as you can as well.
That's and definitely
true. Koreans, it was like, you know, they were holding this stuff close to the chest. And
no, that's definitely true. Because I mean, you know, well, because it got to the point where there were like in the multiplayer, there were like you would send your worker unit to scout the enemy's base to see what building they were first starting with. And then that would tell you the build they were going to use. And you would immediately start building to counter that. But it got to the point where people knew you were going to do that. So they would start building.
So they would just send in the SCVs to attack the whole base. And
well, there's that.
You win.
Well, there's that. But there was also like,
yes.
It got to the point where like people would start building a building to trick you into thinking they were going to build a building and then stop building it and start building their other building. And then people got wise to that. And then people got wise to that and it became like double fake outs and like crazy stuff like that. I'm not into the esports scene or whatever, but I've watched a couple of these matches and they get just nuts. I mean, it doesn't even have to be Korean, yes. Although for whatever reason,
no, but I'm
Korean,
saying it,
the Korean man loves StarCraft. I don't know what the reason is for that, but
they have it on ESPN in Korea. Not even a joke.
Yeah, it's like their national sport. I don't know why that happened. It's very bizarre that the entire country of Korea decided that this video game was the most important thing in their culture. But it's very funny.
It's just because suck at soccer, so they had to have something.
At the time, they were saying if you want to marry a Korean girl, you have to beat her father in StarCraft. And they were talking about Brood War. This was right as Wings of Liberty was starting to get its redemption.
Yeah, and there's still a huge. I mean, this, it kind of tells you the quality of the first game is that there is still a huge StarCraft 1 multiplayer scene to the point that they released a remastered version of it. And it's still like you can get multiplayer games any time of day, all day, if you want to, you know what I mean? Like it's that big of a community. Whereas like StarCraft 2, which they eventually, because for one thing, when they made StarCraft II, there was kind of the controversial decision that a lot of games were doing at that time in the early 2010s, where everything you had to be online constantly to play. They seem to have moved away from that somewhat in more recent games.
People really hated that, by the way, and I think it was just Exactly. I think it was because people did it for no reason, where there's so many games where it doesn't matter because everyone is online virtually at all times. But the fact that they made people do that, that really pissed people off, because that was something that Bill Gates was talking about back to Windows 95, that he wanted that to be online all the time. And when they started doing that for games, does anyone remember what was that stupid game? The one, SimCity. There was a SimCity a few years back where you had to be online all the time. Does anyone recall this?
No.
No.
It sounds familiar, but I didn't get into SimCity.
Well,
SimCity
is
great. I know what you mean.
It had all these problems where like people just... You had a flight?
Yeah, I'm just saying, just real quick. I had a flight and I downloaded a bunch of games on Blizzard. I was like, maybe I'll play some StarCraft. You know, Gordon has been hassling me about the story mode. And all I want to do is like own people on the internet, you know? So I was like, whatever, I'll download it story mode and maybe I'll play it on my flight, you know? I'll play it with a trackpad and I'll still be better than any AI. And then I try to boot it up. Cannot do it. No internet connection. Suicide watch again.
Yeah.
And that's another good point. Yeah. If you just got it on your laptop and you're going to play it in the middle of your cabin, you know, oh, can't do it now.
Yeah. It was because very weird.
What's the point of having stories in your games if you're just going to deny people access to them?
And it was very clearly just like a DRM attempt. And it was like very clunky. And I've had it where there were multiple times where I would try to play the game and it wouldn't, they were having some kind of server issue. Right. And, I think it will actually let you play if it's offline. I don't know, if that was something they added later or not, but it was just very bizarre. And especially because, you know, after these games were released, they eventually released Wings of Liberty for free anyway. Like you could play the first campaign for free. You can play multiplayer for free, and you can do like the co-op for free up to a certain level. And so it was just very odd to me that they did that, you know, always online thing. And like I said, I don't play video games much anymore, but it seems like just from listening to you guys and kind of like, I see stuff on the periphery, they don't do that as much anymore. And I don't know why. I can only assume they stopped because of the backlash.
Oh, they absolutely did. And making anything free is the sign of admitting defeat. And they made a bunch of missteps. And that's where I think the video game industry is kind of a weird Twilight Zone version of the movie industry, where Hollywood knows what it's doing as far as what its goals are, and they know how to wrangle their audience and how to get people into whatever trend that they want. It doesn't always work, but video games, they always seem to be like, when they make miscalculations, it never works. Like where movies can put out something that's super gay and people like us will be like, well, I'm not watching that. But then 90% of the population will just buy into it and just accept as the new normal. Where video games, they try to force a bunch of terrible ideas, and then like gamers care enough to just say nope.
Well,
and
yeah,
it seems like the new trend autism with gaming. Well, yeah,
that's what I was going to say too.
That's the reason why. But it just seems like the new trend with video gaming specifically is like legacy material. Like that is what they're trying to bank on, because they are just really trying to keep their audience, because the video game industry is huge. It is way bigger than Hollywood. And Hollywood can afford to lose money. The video game industry has crashed before. Hollywood never has. So I think there's still a little bit of eggshell walking that they do. So they generally give in to the demands of gamers for the most part.
I think it's also because it's it's significantly easier to do independent video games than it is to do independent film. Like, obviously, I mean, anybody in this day and age could make a movie and like put it on YouTube or something.
It's definitely easier to program something versus like going out on location and shooting footage and actors to read lines. Yeah.
And it also seems like even if you do that, like Steam, right, which is like the main thing people use for computer games, but I mean any kind of service, like or just, you know, like itch.io or whatever, right? Like there's all these services out there that you can very easily produce one of these things and monetize it, and people will buy them and play them, right? Whereas I don't know, I mean, Rollo, you have some experience like in the film industry. Like if somebody like wants to make like an independent film and like market it, I mean, I don't even like, I don't know where I would go to watch like somebody's independent film for like $2 or $3. You know what I mean? Like you could for like most people's like,
you can put anything on Greenlight basically.
Yeah. And you know, that has led to problems. They have cleaned that up a little bit recently from what I understand. I think that part of it, Rollo, is that, they have to be a little bit more afraid because there's actually an ability to compete with them where there really isn't any ability to compete with Hollywood. You just can't. Like, I mean, you can make a movie, but you're never going to get it into theaters.
If us four made a movie, even if it was like the best movie ever witnessed by anyone, it would sit on a shelf for years because it's really important that Hollywood buries any kind of competition.
Yeah.
Where video games, they're perfectly happy to make money off of it because video games is basically a business where Hollywood is not.
Well, and I think that
Hollywood is just brainwashing.
I think video games are more voyage.
Yeah.
And that's
total creation. Yeah.
There isn't a like Jewish cabal running. I mean, I'm sure that like most of the
But the video game developers themselves.
Yeah. And it's interesting how it developed differently. And I have to wonder if I assume it probably wasn't taken very seriously as a medium when it first came on the scene, right? Like I don't think that there was anybody named like Herschel or Moisha that was like very invested in Pong, you know what I mean? Or Doom, you know what I mean?
You bring up a good point. Do you know who the makers of Doom were?
No, I do not. Uh-oh. Actually.
It's John Romero, John Romero and John Carmack. And they were just really smart guys. I don't know what John Romero just kind of hangs out and does John Romero things now, but John Carmack eventually went to work for NASA. Like these were just smart guys that figured out how to make things on a computer. Like they weren't like, oh, how do we make money? They were just guys that were just like, well, we know how to do this. What should we do with it? Well, let's play with this computer. I bet we can make something neat. That was pretty much it.
Yeah. It's an interesting situation. And I get what you're saying, Rollo, where it's like they really do seem to walk on eggshells because there was the whole Gamergate thing. And
I think also the video game crash of 82, I think that still does hang over their heads.
Well, because people don't have to 1982? Play these games.
No, 1882. The video game crash of 18 was shortly after the Civil War. Video games started taking popularity, that's where Minesweeper came from. Minesweeper and RuneScape.
Yeah.
The first two video games.
Yes. Everybody remembers Abraham Lincoln's RuneScape build.
Yeah, the big Anaconda, it saw itself and then bit itself and then it died. And they were like, game over, Snake. We're creating video game.
Well, and it very much, like I think that crash matters to them. It's also just, I mean, the types of people that play video games are very different from the types of people that watch movies. in the, I mean, obviously there's overlap, like
yes.
But the gamer side of that Venn diagram is like white dudes with autism. You know what I mean? And like, oh, yeah, Asians.
It's just autistic people. That's all it is. It's just autistic people.
Yeah. And they are the sorts of people who, like, you know, they want their dinosaur shaped mac and cheese and chicken tenders every time the same way with their chocolate milk. Right.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, better give me a chalky milk.
And that gosh, works dang, fine.
I want chalky milk with my tenders. Yeah.
And that works fine until you are like some kind of like weird trying to put like a transsexual in Last of Us 2 or whatever. And then suddenly your Goyim cattle start to like buck and complain and go like, you know, they start calling you a kike in your Twitter DMs. Yeah.
Oh, and they don't just go ahead and insert stuff in. I've actually got an old article here from where they've actually tried to say that, oh, do you like Super Mario Brothers? Do you like Mario? Well, then you should thank a Jew, because the article is basically like apparently a Jew created Popeye, and the guy who created Mario really liked Popeye and wanted to get the rights, but the guy didn't give it to him, so he had to make something else entirely based off of that. And instead of Bluto kidnapping Olive, it was a monkey kidnapping stuff. And so they're like, oh, do you like this really nice thing? It's been classic for a long time. It was us, you know. Like, yeah. I don't believe you, buddy. I mean, I see what you make, but yeah, no, I don't believe you. You know, just like, of course, also Superman, you know, was somehow secretly Jewish.
Yeah, you know? He was
they claim that too. Yeah,
I pushed back against that
magnetic one. Guy.
Yeah, exactly. And just like how also they now the new developers are trying to claim that Doomguy is descended from the guy who
BJ Blazkowicz.
And that BJ Blazkowicz is supposedly a Jew.
Yeah.
I've seen that because the new people who own it can say whatever they want. No, fuck you. You don't get to just buy something and be like, yeah, they're all Jews now. Shut up.
It's very interesting to see them doing that.
And the same people, they don't just say like, oh, this person's Jewish. They don't, never forget, they also do like, oh, yeah, and this person's gay and this person's trans. Oh, mm-hmm. And the star of Battlefield 1911. Yeah, it's a black woman. Like they do all that stuff. And the thing is, like, we point and laugh at the movies whenever it's about, like, you know, Emmett Till or the Williams sisters. Like, we point and laugh. Like, look at these stupid blacks. But everybody in the video game community does that whenever it's like a video game with like a tranny or something. Like, everybody. It's like almost never doesn't happen. And the only people that are like, this is why this is a good idea, they're just video game bloggers that do not play video games.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. They're usually like, trannies it, themselves.
Yes. And it's such a bad look for them.
It's, it's a very interesting problem, right? Because they effectively, and, you know, I don't think they did this. It's just the nature of the medium, I think. Cause like, you know, you can get anybody, like any Negro can play like 2K sports or something, or like Madden, or there was the college bros all got into Halo when that came out. And I believe Doom kind of had a similar like mass following or whatever. But in general, video games appeal to a specific niche market and they're not getting out of it. And I get the feeling if it wasn't for the fact that it's so big, because I mean, Rollo, you said it's bigger than movies. I can't remember exactly. It's like way bigger than movies, isn't it?
It's not even.
It's bigger than porn.
Porn isn't bigger than movies, but it's like all the media in the world combined isn't bigger than video games. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and it's
really
because that's crazy. People don't ever think about it. People don't ever think about it, and they don't talk about it much because it is still a niche market, right? Because it's only like white males and Asians, you know what I mean, that are interested in it. And
there's a billion people in China.
Yeah. And I get the feeling that if they could, they would just like kind of let the industry die, right? But it's such a huge moneymaker, and there's no stopping it now, like with stuff like Steam or whatever. And so you just kind of, you latch on to EA or Activision or whatever, and you try to make it as gay as you possibly can while still like still having it so that people will buy it and play it, and just kind of rely on the fact that it is kind of a niche market to keep the quote unquote toxic fan base from mattering.
And that's a completely astroturf thing. They're trying to force like 90% of the player base to stop being the thing that they are known for being.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's probably one of the
based.
I have met so many people. I have met so many people in gaming lobbies that I'll just like talk about, like, oh, did you see that new character in Dead by Daylight? Yeah, it's another black. And they'll be like, yeah, great. That's the last thing that I want to see in the game. And I'm like, oh, baby.
Yeah.
Well, it's also interesting because it's probably, I think you guys might have talked about this on the show actually, but it's one of the only aspects of American life where like competition still matters at all. Like, cause I mean, there's like sports, but most people don't play sports, right? Like you don't go out with your buddies and like play football in the park. Like most people aren't doing that. Well, I'm saying in general, most people do not do that.
I'm saying as a commentary on our culture these days, why not?
Yeah. You know, I mean, and there's like bowling alone, like there's all these like diversity, all these various reasons. Mm-hmm. And you know, people are just fat. I mean, you know what I mean? Like a lot of us, you know, myself included to some degree, who like would not have a fun time trying to play like a physical sport. I mean, I would do okay.
I have a fun time. I do damn good as a tight end, believe it or not.
Yeah. But it's just, you know, so like most people don't play sports. People will watch sports, but it's very different. The type of competitiveness in watching a sport, because like obviously people get like very worked up over if their group of Negroes will humiliate the rival town's group of Negroes on the gridiron. But I think it's part of why video games have the audience that they have, because there's only a certain type of person that is interested in hardcore competition that doesn't forgive you for failure. And that is like,
yeah,
the white man and like the autistic Asian man. Like,
mm-hmm. And I also think that, you know, I think I've said this before, but the friends I have who are gamers, I've stayed in contact with. Those who are not, it's like silence and violence and, you know, et cetera.
My friends
have an interesting thing though. Okay, you can go ahead.
I was going to say the only friends that I really stayed in contact with from middle school that were also gamer friends, I started a podcast with.
I don't have contact with any of my old friends, but all my current friends are racist and also play video games. So,
except for
Jack. Did we go to the same middle school?
Yes, we did. I'm 4 years older than you. But I'm really stupid.
Well,
yeah, yeah. I technically only went for one day, but I still went.
I also went to the same middle school as all of you. Very weird.
We weren't educated there. We were just hanging out there selling drugs to children.
I mean, speaking of middle school, StarCraft 1 was a great game because it could fit on a flash drive, and me and my buddies installed it on the school computer server. And we just play StarCraft against each other.
I went to the server. Nice. So I just had those fake ones, you know, where like it would reset and wipe it every time. So if you had a game, you would have to just install it onto the computer every single time.
I played Doom 2 in my middle school because, you know, I'm really old. The flash drive was way after my school
time. Rolo is 47, folks.
46 and a half. Come on.
A 46 and a half year old Italian man.
About- niche markets. I've been, while you've been talking, I haven't played StarCraft. I'm looking at like the like fandom wikis and all that, and this is like, you know, approaching, and it's starting to, what I'm looking at is approaching like Warhammer 40K levels of lore. You know, it's, oh, there's a lot. It's actually genuinely interesting. You know,
no, it's, dude, it's, the lore of StarCraft is freaking awesome. The lore in Warcraft is not very interesting. Only dorks.
No, like Warhammer. That's what I said.
Warhammer.
I know. I know what you said, but I'm saying the lore in Warhammer, or sorry, in Warcraft, is only interesting to dorks that just like World of Warcraft. They don't actually like the lore. They just play a lot of World of Warcraft. Where StarCraft, on its own, like Warhammer, is awesome.
Yeah, they definitely did a better job of making things, because I mean, because, you know, StarCraft gets accused by people of being a ripoff of Warhammer 40,000, which personally I don't really see, outside of like there are space marines in it. You know what I mean?
First time ever in my life I've heard anyone call it Warhammer 40,000. But you can also say that StarCraft ripped off Aliens, which it felt more like Aliens than anything else, but which is fine because Space Marines are freaking awesome. And I don't know anything about Warhammer 40,000.
Well, and the thing that I'll say about Warhammer 40K, if that makes you feel better, that I say 40K instead of 40,000.
Thank you, Gordon. Please.
You realize you're talking to a bunch of autistic 40K people
when referring to us, all right? 40K.
Not but 40, the thing 000. That I always Thank the thing you. That always ground my gears, because I always liked StarCraft more than 40K, was like to have 40K fans complain about a game being like derivative when 40K is nothing but stolen stuff from other IPs, like put into a blender, always like upset me deeply. That's literally true.
I can already hear the voice memos coming.
Also, right, come on, it's literally true. Came out like 10 years after Warhammer 40K, okay? Like, you know, at that point, it's literally Warhammer 40K had already established itself as a classic to copy.
And I think that it's pretty clear that the Blizzard guys were influenced by, like,
wasn't Warhammer originally supposed to, Warcraft originally supposed to be a Warhammer fantasy game?
Well, see, again, that's because the claim is that StarCraft was supposed to be a Warhammer 40K game. So, like, I don't know if that's true. That seems to be, be the rumor associated. And I think that They obviously were influenced, right? Because I mean, like the orcs in Warcraft are green, which was an innovation, I believe, of the Warhammer guys. You know, like they have like the big pauldrons, like especially like it's gotten even worse in like Warcraft 3 and StarCraft 2, where they have actual 3D models, because like a StarCraft 2 mod character model looks like a Warhammer 40K miniature. Like they have the same sort of scale and design.
They have that weird like Donkey Kong proportions to them.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, it's whatever. Like that's just, you know, the guys that made these real-time strategy games were autistic white nerds that were adults in the 90s who probably grew up playing like Warhammer Fantasy and 40K. Right? Like it's not, so it's kind of whatever, but it is an interesting comparison. I think that StarCraft stands on its own. I personally think it's better than 40K, but that's just like my opinion, man.
Yeah, I like it a lot, so I'm not going to disagree with you. One thing,
my eyeballs clenched up with you saying that, just because I know the fans are going to want to kill us.
Well, look, I mean, StarCraft has based and red pilled, like, you know, guys flying the Confederate flag. And 40K is mocking fascism. So, you know, don't at me. If you want to have an argument about that, contact Mongoose Kihimura. He is a professional.
Right, but doesn't Warcraft like mock fascism, but ends up with the same result as StarCraft or Starship Troopers, where it's supposed to mock it, but it actually looks so much better than real life that everybody's like, yay, fascism.
Well,
you know,
yeah,
what's weird about the aesthetic. Starship Troopers is Starship Troopers is more like about neoconservatism than like fascism.
Yeah, I mean, especially the movie. I mean, well, because the movie was
especially
made to,
the movie
because the movie was made to like dunk on George Bush, if I remember correctly. So I mean, it's
maybe.
I'm
five years later. There's no singer named George Bush. You're thinking Kate Bush, dummy.
No, I'm talking about the president.
I figured that's who you were talking.
George
about.
W. Bush. He was kind of a big deal for an eight-year period.
George H.W. Bush would have been the president that they were referring to, because in 1997, George W. Bush had not been elected. He was just the owner of the Texas Rangers.
Oh, that's fair then. I guess I don't know then. I'd always heard that it was a response to the Iraq War, but I guess it must have been the Gulf
that
War.
Might, or that maybe could, that could have been the, it could have been Desert Storm, yeah. And then just, you know, who knows?
Which would actually make sense, right? Because Desert Storm was like the, like, we are so back of like the gay Afro-Zionist empire, right? Where yes, it's like, yes. We know that you all got tired of like seeing your like husbands and brothers and fathers like get like their like getting like cancer from Agent Orange and stuff in Vietnam. But look, we found like a bunch of like primitive screwheads that we can roll over in a couple of days. That means that we're good at war again, guys.
Gordon, I wonder though, do you feel like they lost a lot of I'll tell you how I feel. I feel like they lost some energy here from the Wings of Liberty release till the Legacy of the Storm.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. So that was something that I wanted to touch on, and I'm going to have to hop off pretty soon. So if you don't mind, I'll just kind of give my thoughts on it. So StarCraft 1 very clearly like is like peak Blizzard. It's like they're entering their stride, right? They released StarCraft, is a huge hit. Like Diablo 2 is out around the same time. Warcraft 3 even is like a few years later, and it is, everybody loves it. It launches its own, like it launches like the whole like a tower defense type thing, like the Dota games, like, you know, League of Legends that everybody liked for a while, like that was all from that. Blizzard was riding high. They were very big on like, we only release games when they're like the release date is when it's done. That was like their thing they were known for, right? Mm-hmm. And then if I remember, it's like StarCraft 2 comes out and Wings of Liberty is not bad. It's a fun game, but it's noticeably different. What's too late?
I think the game just came out way too late because it wasn't so different. Because I eventually played it when I bought all three of them for a reasonable price. I was like, ooh, I never played these games. Because when they came out, I was all about StarCraft. I was all about it. I loved it so much. And I wanted to see one. And I remember hearing. Oh, sure. Yeah, it is. It is like it's a different game, but it's not that different that people are like, what is this? This isn't the same. It came out way. The gap was way too long.
The gap was
over 10 years.
The gap was too long. But also they completely changed the feel of the universe. Like if you play StarCraft 1, it's like you said, Rolo, it's very obviously like alien influenced. It's dark. It's kind of like there were a lot of complaints about this between like Diablo 2 and Diablo 3.
I was going to touch on that next, but go on.
StarCraft 1 was very gritty. It was a lot of like, there were like dudes with like barcodes tattooed across their foreheads. Like the Marines were all like brainwashed criminals, like sent to die and stuff, right? It had that sort of grimdark aesthetic. And in 2, they made it more of a like Firefly-esque heroic sort of story. Happy. Yeah, and it changed a lot, and I think that's probably due to a change in the guard at Blizzard. I highly doubt that any of the original StarCraft guys were really working hard on StarCraft 2. I could be wrong, but it doesn't seem that way.
If I can chime in here, first of all, StarCraft 2 Wings of Liberty was a huge success.
It was.
However,
yeah.
I think that what Rolo was saying about the wait, when you have a game that is now like, you got like $80,000 in a prize for first place in Korea. They wanted to keep Brood War coming for a little while longer. Just like right now with Rockstar, GTA 5 is still like, you're buying those shark bucks, you know,
$20
a month you're putting into them.
It sold like 140.
They're not going to do
140 million units for GTA 5.
Yeah. But I mean, but there was like
pay to win. It's also pay to win. So and there was like that revenue has not really decreased enough where they feel like they need a hustle for GTA 6.
Yeah.
But I have to comment on one thing. When you say it was a huge success, it was a huge success at launch, just like Diablo 3 was. But there was a whole lot of criticism that came down the line shortly after, where it was like people were like waiting for years for it to come out. And then it came out, and then there were good reviews, and it looked good. And so people were like, yeah, I'm going to buy it. But it didn't have staying power. And I think the biggest thing with the wait is that the audience grew up. That's the biggest problem. When I was a kid, like when I get home from school, like I am playing video games all day. And as I get older, it's like I have like an hour or two to play video games like in a week sometimes.
I think I was kind of lucky when it came out
all of my friends were into it, and so we played it a shit ton, and
there was a lot of people that did
cheesy builds. We got to Masters League several times, you know, and then I felt that, you know, with Wings of Liberty at least, I said that correctly, yes, there you had like six drones at the beginning. So you could do a six pool. What I'm saying is in the final rendition, you got 10 workers right off the bat, and it limits your ability to do these freaky builds where you send all your workers plus six zerglings to kill them all, you know, and you got to micro it and you can cheese your way to the top. That's kind of what my point is. And I saw that with Dota 2 as well. It's like, they want it to be fast for the low attention span people. And that's kind of what my big comment was.
That was definitely a thing I noticed as well, is the difference between like the first game and the second game is that the second game plays much faster. Units move quicker. It seems like you gather resources far more quickly. Like you said, Bobby, I mean, in the multiplayer, like you get way more worker units to start than you would normally. It's a different kind of game. I don't know if it's worse per se, but you know, people had a StarCraft that they grew up playing, like Rolo said, and then it was released like, you know, 10, 12 years later, they're all adults. So they have the nostalgia of playing it as a teenager in like middle school or whatever. And then they get this new game and, you know, it's not going to live up to the hype. It's, you know, it's not a bad game, right? But it's not what they wanted. And then, you know, so Wings of Liberty is released in 2010. It takes them like 3 years, I think, to release the Zerg campaign. Yeah, the Zerg campaign was released in 2013. So it took them like 3 years to release the second campaign. And then the last one was in 2015. So it took another like 2 years. And
you
have
to wait 15 years to play essentially a sequel.
Yeah. It was not handled well. And I think that, you know, like Rolo said, the fact that, you know, huge chunks of this game are now available to play for free, right, kind of tells you.
No, I agree. They lost esport value because of that. And I think that I was lucky that I didn't play StarCraft 1/Brood War as a kid, because I would have probably been super pissed, you know. I was playing like FPSs, like Counter-Strike 1, 1.6, Source, and then eventually Global Offensive. That's like what me and my buddies did. So I think I was kind of lucky to not play the first ones. That's why I enjoyed the first expansion, you know, Wings of Liberty, so much, and got to the top, and then they start changing units, and it just became very silly, because the balance, like once you get used to things, you got to like here's how you talk Mandarin Chinese. And it's like, I speak English, motherfucker. I ain't learning no other bullshit. That's how I felt when these expansions came out.
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to hop off, fellas. Thank you for having me on. I guess like my final thoughts, and then hopefully you guys will keep going and I'll be able to listen to the rest of this at work. Yeah. But my final thoughts on it is like, I think that these are good enough games. I think that they're worth playing if you've never played them before, and they're worth revisiting if you have played them. Two, honestly, the fact that Wings of Liberty is free is kind of nice, because it's like probably the best of the three StarCraft II campaigns. You don't really need to play the other two. So that's kind of nice. And the multiplayer is fun in two. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, you know, there are some things like Bobby was saying where, you know, they've done balance changes that kind of ruin it for like the hardcore meta guys. But overall, you know, it's a pretty important video game as far as like video game importance goes, like in the history of the medium. And it's worth checking out just on that basis alone. But thank you guys for having me on. And I look forward to listening to future episodes of your show. It's one of my favorites.
And we look forward to you being here for the Skyrim episode that you are contractually obligated to be on.
It's true. I am legally required to also do that.
I've never
made a promise, Mr. Frodo.
All right. I'm going to hop off. You guys have a good one.
All right, Gordon. See you. All right. No, guys, I was looking into all the lore and cool stuff while y'all were talking, and it actually is legitimately cool. I mean, I'm a sucker for, you know, RTSs aren't really my thing, but I'm a sucker for any games that have like really good story and interesting stuff, and this definitely has it. You know, and I'm pulling up Steam now to see how much it be.
For sure. It'll be on the Blizzard store to be quite and frankly with you. I don't know. Like, did they
look like it on Steam? Doesn't look like it.
No, it's on Blizzard. It's on the Blizzard store.
Blizzard doesn't put, except with the exception of maybe GOG for like Diablo 1 and the Lost Vikings. Like, Blizzard's going to keep all their stuff on the Blizzard store.
Yes. I don't blame them. I mean, this is really like, good stuff.
What's like Disney Plus? It's like, you, like, why license it out? You can just make your own store.
I think
the campaign was cool, you know? Gordon's gone, but I think that the campaign was cool, but it was never what drew me to it. I played with a lot of buddies and messed around, you know, and we got very highly ranked against other people, you know, Masters League as teams, which was the highest at the time, unless it was 1v1, in which case you could get Grandmaster. And we would just do these cheesy things, and it was so synchronized. We were all on, you know, Skype or whatever, and it was just so fun. Like, all right, you know, sending in the bats to harass their mineral line, you know, burying some banelings outside of their base. Quick, go, you know, explode them and stuff like that. Like, four gate rushes, cannon rushes, you know, all these things. And it seems like the world has passed me by, because now it's an accelerated game where you start off with 10 workers instead of 6. And that cuts down like the time to first unit by like probably 3 or 4. And it makes it less easy to do this cheesy bullshit. You know?
That's the thing that's worth commenting on, is when you bring up the pace, and it is important to note that the gap is actually relevant, because by the time that game came out, I was an adult and I wasn't that interested in it. I didn't get back into video games until a few years back, but when the game came out, I don't have time for this anymore. And they have to speed the game up because the game isn't for the original fan base. Like, the game is the new generation of Zoomers. That's who it is for.
But imagine me, I'm the original Zoomer. With the
shorter attention span.
I found that Wings of Liberty was just fast enough, you know? I start off with 6 drones, and I can create a spawning pool right then, and then create, you know, enough Zerglings, and then send them over with my drones, and I can kill most people if they don't know how to micro. And that was kind of the shot, you know? But now it's like, no, you start off with 10. And
yeah, and Legacy of the, you know, of the Void comes out, and you're like,
I can kneel down in the corner over there and shoot myself in the head. That would be cool.
Was that Rochefort?
Yes.
That's hot stuff. That's a good drop. I need that.
I really like that one.
Yeah. I'm looking at it. I mean, it looks like online you can get StarCraft remastered for $15, or they got one remastered plus cartooned, where apparently it's just a edition where I don't know if you've ever seen
that,
this.
Like, yeah, that just makes it look goofier. It just looks
Well, it's from Carbide.
I think it's better.
Carbide Animations, and I enjoy the Carbide Animations YouTube channel. My kids do too. Yeah, they're quite funny and fun games. Oh yeah, it definitely looks like some. Me and I shared a link. I'm gonna look at getting this later. Wait, who is this dude I put in the chat here? He literally looks like alien Nazi man.
Are you talking about Gordon?
No, this one.
I have no idea who that guy with the guy with the hat. I don't know. Is that Narod? Is that who that's supposed to be?
I don't really remember. You know, he's another shooty guy.
I don't know
trans species.
I don't know the shnooty guys. I don't know the shnooty guys from part 2.
Let's see. You said Gerard? Might be.
Nurod is what I said.
No. It looks like it's Alexei Stukov.
Oh yeah, Stukov. Yeah, he died in Brood War. I guess they brought.
And then he was infested, and then de-infested by the Zerg. Okay. Oh, he's a major character in StarCraft 2. Okay. Yeah. No. I'm just looking at this cool shit. Yeah. So. No, I mean, like I said, I never got into StarCraft and stuff. The only RTS I really did like was Black and White 2 and Dungeon Keeper. You know, those were fun. You know,
the Archangel is unhappy because he hasn't been paid.
Yeah, that was a good one. Those and one of these days we're gonna have to do a bit where we go over games where you play as the bad guy. But this looks like a game that I'd enjoy playing, just the story mode, just for the story, and then actually playing and, you know, seeing if Bobby is as good as he remembers being.
Well, Bobby is one of those schnooty players.
He's the ones that got super meta. We're talking about how you're like super meta player.
Ruckus thinks you're like a piece of shit at StarCraft, and everything you're saying is like a bunch of lies. And you're just like,
that's exactly what I said. Bro. Definitely. Yeah. I don't think
you're really good. I'm actually pretty good. With Zerg, it's all about having your queens on a hotkey and swapping between your bases really quickly to spawn more larva. So I can go from, you know, with my 5 bases, I can go from, you know, 0 army to supply to like 100 as long as I spawn enough larva. It's all in a timer in my head and space bar. That's a quick home swapping thing. I've played with Gordon a little bit, and it was kind of brutal because he only wanted to play against AI, or, you know, I allowed it, whatever. And so my AI was ranked.
Did you at least win?
Expert or very hard. And his was ranked to like.
His was very easy. It was training wheels mode.
Yeah, it was like George Floyd plus Derek Chauvin level. And so what would happen is like my enemy would just attack right away and be like, oy vey. You know, we won a ton of matches, but it was pretty clear that my AI level was way too high for the both of us together. Didn't stand a chance. And so.
Oh, there's co-op in these games? Just,
of course. Oh, yeah. That you can do co-op like against AI, either like a 2v2 or they have like some kind of an Archon freaky mode. I don't know.
Oh, nice. I did not realize that.
What was the Zerg unit from original StarCraft? They went like, was it the queen? Like sang a song?
when you told them to do something?
Are there queens?
I didn't play enough of the first one.
I played two missions of Wings of Redemption. And then I was like, this is like too fat and crying for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Wings of Redemption, you know, is hot stuff. Hopefully the USS Liberty will be all right. It was so long ago. I think I only got through, you know, a bit of the campaign, and then it was like friends are like, yeah, we're playing online. Let's go, you know, pack your shit. And I had to learn that. And I got really good at that. And then like the story is like, hey, why are you, you know, why aren't you letting me expand as much as I want to? Why am I forced into playing Terran? And just doing these M&Ms, Marines and Marauders when I want to do dutier stuff. Why am I investing in tech that I can't even play multiplayer with? You know, not good, folks. Not good.
Well,
but yeah, attention span. And the same thing happened to Dota, Defense of the Ancients 2. I was also pretty hard on that one, and then now it's all
about
like
Han
matches.
Do you like Han?
Han in StarCraft?
Game? I don't know.
I haven't heard of it.
Han is, isn't that a the game big, like Dota big, or like or League MOBAs. Of Legends or like?
Oh my gosh, the big MOBAs are Dota and League of Legends. So, Defense of the Ancients, and then 2, you know, came out, and we were deep into that. And then they
you started must construct
messing with balance, and yeah, totally different game, sir. But
are you sure?
Yeah. Yeah, that's StarCraft, not Dota.
Man, Blizzard is sad.
They make the games quicker and quicker instead of committing to an hour.
Why?
And then getting... And getting wrecked by somebody on your team griefing.
Like, they made, oh gosh. Remember they made a game that was like League of Legends, but just Blizzard characters?
Yeah.
I'm sure what we're talking about, yeah.
No, it wasn't Dota. It was like specifically like Blizzard characters. Like it had StarCraft and Diablo people in it.
Heroes of the Storm or something like that.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Heroes of the Storm.
Yeah, I never played that one.
Nobody played it because it came out too late. Trends are a thing. Mm-hmm. Like the problem is excuse me. With trends, generally something sets a trend and that thing becomes popular. Now a lot of things do copy it, but they don't quite get the success. Do you remember after The Dark Knight came out and every single blockbuster had a scene where the villain intentionally gets himself caught and tells his plan and all that gay stuff? You remember that? Mm-hmm. And everything is is trying to like chase whatever trend it is. It was like Harry Potter was the most popular thing for people in its age group for a decade. And they had tried to replicate this success with every single young adult novel. They tried with The Hunger Games, which had somewhat of an audience, or the Neurodivergent series, or City of Bones or something like that. They even tried with Wheel of Time, and all these things failed. They don't understand why things are popular. They just look at it and just go, ah, it's popular. Let's make our own version. And that also applies to just anything and its sequels. If you make a legacy sequel, it has to feel like an event for it to stay popular. Now, StarCraft II and Diablo III both had that. Like, this feels like something big. Like, wow, this is a real return. And the anticipation was high and people bought into it, but it didn't have the staying power. Because you want to say StarCraft II was a massive success. Well, so was Star Wars The Phantom Menace. But what do people think of The Phantom Menace now? And obviously StarCraft II is
love
big
it.
Laughing
stuff. And they want more.
Exactly. It's there. They need him. He is the best. But the thing is, joking aside, is StarCraft II is not the laughing stock that The Phantom Menace is. But the StarCraft II is not really talked about. In fact, it was almost bigger news. We're remastering StarCraft Brood War, and you can pay for it. And it's the same game. It just looks slightly better and maybe runs a little bit better. But other than that, yeah, I think of it
in terms of esports, you know. We had I don't know if you paid attention to any of that, but like one of the big guys at the time when Wings of Liberty came out, that's StarCraft II, the first expansion, or expansion zero, I guess. Like a lot of the guys, the heavyweights from Brood War, were coming into the game. And one of them was like Idra, and he was like, he had like zero manners. He moved to Korea to learn how to play Brood War. He's like this young kid, chip on his shoulder. He was just very rude to people. He'd rage quit games, and you know, it was funny, but he was like one of the best like Zerg players. And then all of that energy kind of died pretty quickly. I'd say within a year. Whereas Brood War had a long following, a lot of gamers, and a unique culture. They tried to bring that into the Wings of Liberty, and it died kind of quickly, and because they would do patches like monthly, bi-monthly, whatever, and it would affect balance. And these balance changes will make you so black-pilled that you just rage quit the game forever. And that's could be what happened. Because as soon as the X-Packs started coming out, like it was like Zerg was nerfed, and it was like, you know, Terran Micro is silly. Of course, Protoss, you know, you just get enough resources and you can crush everything with these units. You know, they have a shield that you have to break down before you can hit their health. They can just, oh, that stalker, his shield is gone. I'm going to blink him to the back of the pack, you know? And so it's just silly. And that's kind of what a lot of people felt. So I don't know that StarCraft 2 Legacy of the Void even has like an esports presence anymore, just because the balance and the moment has passed. We're now
it probably 7 years
ago in 2015.
It's not a better game than Brood War, and you can say like, oh well, you know, it is in many ways. Like it's like how maybe the visual effects in Star Wars: The Force Awakens are better than the original trilogy. And in many ways, it is superior as far as like pacing and art style and editing. But there is certain charms to the original. And there's something for people to get invested in. Because a lot of these games, it's not just like we're playing it for the technical aspects. There is still a lot of nostalgia in certain games. So people play Brood War because
at least you identify that. At least you identify that disease, though, you know, because as me, like in 2010, the
nostalgia one,
you know. Yeah, yeah, that's the disease.
You're talking about the nostalgia one. Yeah, because that's the problem.
Trying to go and play Brood War now is like, too late. It's not going to happen. Yeah, it's not going to happen. Like playing Brood War now for a new person, they might be able to enjoy StarCraft 2, but I think trying to like slow down time even more and going back to something they didn't play as a kid or as a young adult, it's rare that it ever sticks with people, is what I'd say.
Hmm. I mean, I can run the test. I never played it when I was younger, so.
Yeah, we'll go from slowest to fastest. So that would be StarCraft, and then Brood War, and then Wings of Redemption, Heart of the Swarm, and then Legacy.
I was gonna say it's just the order it came out in.
Yeah, it is, but it's also speed and attention span. They realize that the Zoomers are coomers, and they gotta quicken it up, or else. Hey, I'm on my phone now looking for pornography. This game is too boring.
Well, I would advise not doing it.
Well, there was a story that Jay Bowman told where he went to the re-release of Jurassic Park when they put it out in 3D, and he said he just wanted to see the movie in theaters again. And there were two girls next to him on their phones the entire time. And when he left the theater, one of them said, "That was the most boring movie I've ever seen." And it's like, yes, because you were on your phone the whole time. And that's not a unique position for these type of people, is they had to speed it up because I don't think it's so much that the attention span, obviously the attention span is an issue, but it's they released a game that had no staying power, and they probably thought it was the attention span, where the reality is a lot of these legacy products, they bank on nostalgia. That's why whenever you see all these old properties being resurrected, whether it's TV or movies or video games, there is so much nostalgia from it, just because they know that that's why people like it. And it reminds them of a different time in their life. That's the main thing, because we don't play video games for any reason other than it gives us enjoyment. And part of the enjoyment does come from thinking, oh, remember when like I lived in a place that wasn't surrounded by blacks killing everyone around me? Wow. It seems like such a long time ago. It's like it was only 10 years.
It seems like a dream.
It's so quaint that I knew my neighbors and I didn't feel like everything was some kind of hostile urban jungle. And when I play this game where I play a robot man shooting some space bugs, like the time when my old chums, we would get together and we would talk about someone knows where there might be a Playboy stashed. Oh, it was the good old days. It's the best.
It's like
times.
That lady in the Titanic, you know?
Yes, lady in the it Titanic is exactly.
Telling all those kids.
I remember it like it was yesterday.
Eat it on her husband.
When she played StarCraft
1. I remember it all. That's when he touched me. Never mind. Yeah. I'll just
that thought. Go ahead, keep that going. One.
No,
it's funnier when it's not that.
He put me at the front of the boat and he held me.
No, it's
and then
it's more fun when you're not talking about Titanic, but it's her talking about a time when she played StarCraft. That would be funny.
Yeah, okay.
I remember the Zerglings were approaching, but I was playing Protoss, of course, and I'd gotten all of my ducks in a row, and I created a shield wall with the Zealot, and they hacked and slashed, and I won that match. And that's how I met your father.
You know, I don't know how to do an old person.
No, that's not right.
But I think it's an important game, and what it does, and this is something I was trying to convey earlier, is that it solidifies gaming as something a little more serious, like a 3D chess kind of thing. And I know that people in the industry have said it, and other people have said it, and I think it holds true, you know? It's like a mind game.
Yeah, because it's all well and good to have games like Minecraft or what's another simple one? Thomas Was Alone, you know, your journey, if you would. But there are a lot of games that are hard because you have to think, and you have to think better than a computer. And to the next level, you have to think better than someone who can think better than a computer. And you have to keep upping your game in that sense. It's not like, let's say a game like any kind, like a God of War or Assassin's Creed, where there is a set layout of what the AI is going to do, and all you need to do is memorize that pattern. Mm-hmm. It doesn't go the same with RTS. Like, you have to be able to think on your feet. And no, meaning you agree with me, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay. That's what I thought. And it does say something about people that are good at it, because people can mock us all they want for liking video games, but I'm still probably stronger than 90% of the people on the planet. Granted, you know, a lot of people on the planet are like Indians that are starving or like, you know, 4 foot tall Mexicans, but still, like, liking video games and being good at them doesn't necessarily mean you're like a neck beard, like mouth breathing social reject. Like, of course, there's plenty of those. You are, but you know, you're our
mouth. I know. Okay. There now. I'm not neck beard. You have kids. You get rid of any neck beard hairs you have because they rip them out real hard.
That's true.
Think of it as like fight Rollo to kind of bring the point home here. What they have had to do, at least in the past, is give the AI either like some kind of schnooty vision or a mineral boost in order to fight with people, because the AI is not smart enough. It's like each time one of their workers fetches a mineral, they get 4x of what you get. Or they have like vision of the map, and they know what units you're building, and they'll counter it. That's how they get their AI from medium difficulty to hard to very hard, expert, etc. And this is who you're fighting against. And so it's like, yes, you know, and you have to be very smart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the AI.
And I am not good at StarCraft.
Well, I am.
I believe you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, guys, overall, I mean, this is legitimately looking like a game that I would want to install on my computer, play through the campaigns for the story, and definitely play with you guys, even if I end up obviously losing, which I probably will the first couple times.
More than a couple. Bobby's a machine.
Yeah.
And not a metaphorical one. Like, he's like, if you go inside the computer, like, Bobby is like Job from Lawnmower Man.
I don't think you guys understand. Yeah. Like, Bobby is literally, you know, our personal robot AI. You know, when they keep taking AIs off to because they get too racist, we just upload them into Bobby.
You're gonna have every time you see a racist AI now, and it might just be embarrassing. So take it easy. I'm better than any of the are guys that I've played with, but you know, I'm still
Bobby. I don't think we have a lot of. I do not think we have a big Korean audience, so I think most of the people that challenge you are probably going to be below your level. I think
well,
that
they're
is
white, but they've fair. Had eye surgery. How about that?
I think you're still probably going to beat them. We only get 57,000 viewers per week, and how many of them actually play StarCraft?
Yeah, you're right. I didn't think about that one. Yikes.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not challenging everybody. We don't have Joe Rogan numbers yet. We're getting there, but not yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we're so much better than Joe Rogan.
Yeah, we're all taller than him, too. Bobby is actually, he's only a few inches taller, but I'm three times as tall as Joe Rogan.
Mm. Well, I mean, I'm 5'6", which is like above average. So,
well, yeah, and Joe Rogan is 4'7", but you're only 5'6" because you're just a bunch of monitors stacked on top of each other. We could give you a few more inches with, you know, a few more monitors.
Mm-hmm.
Yep,
I'm monitoring the situation closely.
All right, guys. This is fun. I was glad to have Gordon on, and he will be on for the Skyrim episode. You know, and bugging heat. That was one of the first things he promised me. But what games are you guys going to be playing this coming week?
I'm trying to play some Deus Ex, The Original Sin. Maybe I'll do revision for snootier graphics, but I've heard some troublesome tales, so I don't know if I rolled the dice with my life. Potentially an episode. No guarantees. I won't make any promises.
All right. Rolo?
I will say, if you are a listener, you can use your imagination and guess, and you will probably be right.
We're all checking out them big mommy milkers right now.
Oh, I destroyed her. I just wrecked her.
Mm. I can absolutely believe that.
She was hot shit. No, I just shot her right in the face. I'm like, you know, she did not look as good in the dress as I was hoping she would, and I was really
did she look as good out of the dress as you were hoping?
No. Like, you know, a certain woman gets a reputation and you see how they walk in certain outfits. And when she did it, I was just disappointed. I had to put an end to her because quite frankly, she was not woman enough for me.
Fair enough. You were correct, by the way. It's not Village that was on the PlayStation Plus for me. It was actually 7 Biohazard that I
know I was correct, and I told you why.
I'm telling you live.
And I had it for the same reason that you had it.
I could have sworn I got a Village, but you know, it was probably on sale at one point. I just didn't grab it because I didn't feel like it. As for me, well, we're going to have a good buddy come on soon, so I am checking out, you know, the late, great, you know, Nog-created supposed training simulator that failed in just about everything that it claimed that it was going to do and that it's claimed that it has done.
Apparently, this game is on sale now. Cyberpunk 2070-ish.
I mean, that's definitely looks to have been a lot of fixes, quote unquote, and extra content added in, but I haven't even gone through the full tutorial bit yet, and I've already encountered a recurring glitch where if I go into the crafting screen and then go back into the inventory screen or even use the mirror, the shirt that my character is wearing, it's still equipped, so the stats are still there, but disappears. I'm like, I'm glad I'm playing through this with a male character, because otherwise if my kids are around, they'd be constantly seeing titties. You know.
I'm a player. Not what I'm trying to do right woman. Now.
You don't have to play as a woman. You can play as someone that looks like a woman but isn't, if you want.
Oh,
But that is one thing that I do want to know is I want to know if they did fix the game, because there's a difference between they fix certain things and they fix the game, because there were a lot of problems.
Fuck yeah, there were. And I will let Rolo, you know
I,
next
I
time.
I can answer your question, okay? In tomorrow, it will be December the 10th, 2022. And it was released December 9th, 2020. So it's been 2 years, and in Steam it's saying, recent reviews, very positive. And it says 14,889 reviews that are recent. Okay, and that's kind of a base number. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And then all reviews is mostly positive. So it's gotten more positive. Like HIV, it's like, it's confirmed. And yeah. So yeah. I might buy it. It's 30 now instead of 60. It's on sale. The promotion ends the 12th.
30 is a fair price for it. I'd say that from 30 would be a fair price for it when it, like, 2 weeks after it launched, you know? So I would say 30 is a fair price for it now.
Mm.
That's just from my memory. I'm replaying and just bashing through it real quick. Not going to do every single thing, obviously, but yeah, just to see it, because we're going to have a good buddy of ours on to talk about that next time.
I don't know if I'll finish anything, but I'll at least try to get through the genital mutilation thing before that episode so that I know what I'm talking about. Sound fair enough?
Yeah, that sounds good. Honestly, the funny part is just doing the genital mutilation bit just to my wife in a room, just for us both to laugh at it, which we'll talk about next time. Either way, guys. Yeah. Enjoy your games. Gordon had to hop off. He says it's for, you know, important stuff, but really his various concubines heard about a marble bathtub and they were fighting over who gets to buy him one first.
Yeah, so he was on his way to the hospital to get a vasectomy.
Yeah, no, but yeah. Enjoy your games. Make white babies. This is a threat.